Hello, everyone. I'm Kathleen Francis, the host of Wise Women, and I have the privilege of leading this podcast that Gary Null originated with the purpose of bringing women with wisdom who have lived a productive and, shall we say, adventurous life sometimes. That the purpose of the podcast is to offer wisdom to women who are younger, and as Gary would call it, on the ladder of life, coming up on the rungs and doing our best to climb those rungs of life in a more productive and contributing way. And it's my great privilege today, and it couldn't be a better first guest for this podcast than a woman who has contributed greatly to the understanding of what it means to be a woman, to be a person on this path, and have the ability to explore what it is to be alive and what it means to contribute to the world in a more effective way. And so with that said, may I please present Roshi Joan Halifax to Wise Women. Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thank you so much. It's truly an honor. I'm delighted to be here and looking forward to our conversation.
Well, it's been what's been wonderful for me. I've been immersed in your online videos, the interviews that you have had, your TED Talks. And so I've had the advantage to get to know the depth of who you are as a human being. And it's just touching to me. And I can't urge enough that the people who are listening today to be wise enough to explore those things that I had the privilege of seeing online, because so much of what you presented in those videos was so valuable and so touching and so contributing to the depth of who we can be as human beings. So I thank you so much for that. It was very touching.
Thank you. And whatever depth I've had, I think has come about because I've struggled a good part of my life in various ways. So I think, you know, depth for some of us arises because of having been in the depths.
I certainly can connect these things that you're speaking about. In fact, there were a couple of points of connection, and I feel like, you know, it's like I'm meeting you, but I want to say to you, hey, how are you? Hello again. You know, how many lifetimes have we been around this block with perhaps connecting with each other and say, Joan, how were the last 10 lifetimes? Did you have one that was really special you want to share about? So, you know, that's the fun and wonder of what we can do. If I can, you know, move into a part of yourself, your consciousness, and bring forth, access those things that perhaps have not been in some of the videos that I've seen of you, because you're a great master and you have so much to share with us. And the theme in so much of your life has been about compassion. And like you, I had some very early traumatic times that molded the direction of my life. And that's spoken about in many of the videos that you shared. So with that, what was it that had you direct your life into the work of being with people who are at the place of transition that we all will one day arrive at?
Maybe from one point of view, we're all in transition all the time. I think that one of the things that became apparent to me at a very young age had to do with the truth of impermanence, you know, how uncertainty, you know, pervades everything, how our attempts to connect to something that will be certain, sure, that gives us a sense of stability and safety, that really doesn't exist. You know, it's like the Berlin Wall coming down. Who knew? And so I believe it was, you know, partly childhood illness, which was very devastating for me and turned me, you know, inward. So I discovered I had an inner life, which really enhanced my capacity to be still, to appreciate solitude, and also to appreciate imagination. And I think imagination is a very important part of our lives. And in a funny way, our technology draws us away from our own gift of imagination all too often. I have a friend who calls technology, or, you know, Google, wonder killer. And fortunately, you know, I was born way before wonder killer took over, and had the opportunity through the journey of illness to really ignite my imagination, which, you know, allows one to explore territories which are non-conventional, and also to open up to possibilities that are rare.
I love that. And, you know, Gary is such a champion of creativity and imagination, and has been very kind to me with regard to my own creativity. And as a child, because my own mother committed suicide when I was five. And so, you know, I played the pity party a little bit because it got to attention. And then I chose to see it later in life. At that time, my father put her in sanitariums and this sort of thing. And it was all the wrong thing to do until she finally just said, I'm out of here. I need something better than this. And what it did for me, and I'm sure you know the pinnings of that, it caused me to be more resourceful, to be more resilient, to utilize my own internal process to create with. And I just, you know, I feel blessed that I've been blessed with these characteristics. And it's, you know, I want to encourage people to use that imagination, to use whatever people always say, oh, you can do that. You know, I can't do that. And I say, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And it's, don't you feel that creativity is just such a critical component for our lives, to feel alive and to feel expressed?
Yeah, I think Kath, you're absolutely right. And I think part of it has to do with us having the capacity to actually presence the experience or the experiences that we have that are difficult, you know, to presence our suffering. And, you know, I think there's something important for us to keep in mind in relation to this, because a lot of times people look at traumatic experiences as something to, you know, run away from, as something to stuff or deny. And, you know, even though the institutions that a lot of us serve in, or the situations that we encounter in our daily lives, or the very people that we're connected to, or what's happening now on our earth with climate change and the extraction of, you know, of so-called resources just for human consumption, you know, it might seem as though the world is devolving at this time. And actually, I read an article in the New York Times this morning. Everything is looking better, except for democracy, by the way. But, you know, from the point of view of complex adaptive systems, you know, even as our life, even as our society, as our earth, things seem pretty fraught. And boy, media really plays into this for feeling for us. You know, one of the things that we know from complex adaptive systems is that systems that break down have the incredible potential to reorganize themselves at a much higher and more robust level of functionality when we learn from breakdown. And, you know, we know that this process or this paradigm also applies to people. You know, the experience of breakdown, the experience of being overwhelmed by grief or fear or being in a big psychological knot actually has the potential for giving one an extraordinarily positive view of the potential of others and of ourselves to grow from challenges, to grow from the ordeals that we experience, instead of being diminished or instead of being crushed. And, you know, the psychological changes from our struggle with challenging life circumstances can be a real gift in our lives, you know, can foster resilience, can foster hope. These experiences can foster joy and wonder. And, you know, you think about people like Malala or Nelson Mandela, for example, who survived incredible trauma but came back so transformed by the experiences that they went through. And what actually made them hardier was that journey through this landscape that was so, you know, fraught. And another thing is that I believe, and I think you know this, Kath, that one is given greater ability to actually thrive in the present rather than being overwhelmed by the past. You know, once you're past the pity party, so to speak, once you've kind of worked it, you've brought presence to it. And, you know, being through these experiences doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we're returning to the life or the situation or the attitude or whatever that we experienced before what we went through. But what we can discover, and I'm sure you know this from your direct experience, is that what you went through, what I went through as a child, what so many people have gone through actually brings about a kind of greater capacity to be in the present, a greater appreciation for the present. And I think about yesterday was Brother David Stendhal Rast's 96th birthday. And he, he went through the Second World War, and his thing is gratefulness. And you realize, and you know, I'm up in the mountains in this beautiful high altitude green valley. And I just have this feeling when I take my early morning walk of just, I'm just filled with gratitude that as I meet my 80th year, which I, in a few weeks, I turn 80, you know, that beyond the ending of the old way of being, there is the new, there's an emergence. And, you know, I feel that I live in a present where the wounds aren't absent, but they're there in a form that really has supported me to flourish. So that's what I want to say to, you know, our friends who are gathered to listen to this podcast or this be in this Zoom session, that don't despair. That there are givens in this process that one goes through in the journey of maturation that actually enhance one's character. really gives strength to us. And I'm remembering some words from Haruki Murakami. He wrote a really powerful thing called Kafka on the Shore, and he's, see if I can pull this out of my mind right now. He says that, and once the storm is over, you won't remember how you made it through, how you managed to survive. You won't even be sure, in fact, whether the storm is really over. But one thing is certain, when you come out of the storm, you won't be the same person who walked in. And that's what the storm is all about. So that's just what I want to offer, you know, to your friends who are gathered for this program.
That's so wonderfully, you're so wonderfully articulate. I just adore the way that you present your concepts in such a powerful way, in a simple way, in a gentle way, to let us in into the consciousness that you have embraced as your life. And I am a total fan. If I had my way, I'd just have you on every week. But one thing, as you were speaking, and you know, Dr. Jim, I don't even know his last name, and he talked about his, you know, his near-death experience and such. About 5 months ago, I had pneumonia, which I know I created because I was going through a passage that I experienced a tremendous lack of compassion. The people that were taking this left turn in my life, and I was just at a place of, oh, I'm out of here. I'm getting out of here. You know, it just didn't seem right for me to, you know, like actually commit suicide. So I created, you know, pneumonia and left for a minute. You know how that goes. Now, I suspect you do know how that goes very well. And in his near-death experience, Dr. Jim, what's his last name? He never told me it.
Is it Jim Gordon?
It must have been. And he said, when he was, you know, going toward the light, he said, no, I'm not done yet. Well, mine went like this. It was like, get your ass back down there. You're not done. We need you. So here I am with a new aspect and taking in that, what you just expressed, to be able to make a contribution. And I hope that I'm doing my job today. I feel like I am. And, you know, that's something that we can bring forward because, oh my God, who would have ever suspected we'd be here at this time on the earth with what's going on? And we're going, oh my God, did we really sign up for this? You know, I remember once I went to the dentist and I had nitrous oxide at that time. And, you know, I was like, what I experienced, which I suspect you have this knowing in your spiritual practices, it was like the single breath of God was just, and we were on the exhale. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, maybe what all this is about is the oneness comes in, you know, the whole planet just goes poof. Is that where we're at? What's your opinion?
Well, I'm a social activist, and you know, as you said, you felt called back here, you know, onto this earth, because this is where the action is, this is where the work is, and this is where we wake up. And I was reading a blog recently by a wonderful person called Jacqueline Gill, Dr. Jacqueline Gill. And she was writing about musk ox. And I just want to share this with you because I think it's so rich for what we're speaking about. Because, you know, it's what kind of attitude do we bring to any given moment? And that is a question I think that is really important for us to look at. Just like Viktor Frankl says, you know, choice, you have a choice. So she wrote, to me, pragmatic optimism isn't Pollyannaism. It's a commitment to solving problems because we don't have the luxury of inaction, either from despair or from naive hope that someone else will save us. And then she says, it's stubbornness with our eyes wide open. And I think that her point in this, what she shared, is really important. It does take determination. It does take, in Buddhism, we call virya, this sense of deep wholeheartedness. And she goes on, forget climate hawks and doves. I'm a climate musk ox. Musk ox are matriarchal. They tough out the worst of the Arctic winter through sheer will. When one of their herd is vulnerable, the strong circle up and protect the weak, facing outwards like a circular phalanx of badassery. Ooh. And then she says, musk ox are tough, resilient, ice age survivors. And then she says, be like a musk ox.
Wow.
Yeah, I just think talk about badassery. I think, you know, my practice is Zen. And it has to do with that capacity to really show up, you know, to be present, to not turn away from the great sort of difficulties that we experience. And in this regard, I think about my friend, who's the climate scientist. Well, she's not a climate scientist. She's a climate activist and a great storyteller. And I hope you have her on your program.
Oh, I would love to.
Terry Tempest Williams. She is one brave and upright woman. And she wrote this. She said, you know, a good friend said to me, you are married to sorrow. And she replied, I'm not married to sorrow. I just choose not to look away.
Oh my God.
She just calls it out. And then she goes on, Kath, and she said, you know, there's deep beauty in not averting our gaze. No matter how hard it is, no matter how heartbreaking it can be, it's about presence. Mm. It's about bearing witness. And then she wrote, I used to think bearing witness was a passive act, and I don't believe that anymore. I think that when we are present, when we bear witness, when we do not divert our gaze, something is revealed, the very marrow of life. We change. A transformation occurs. Our consciousness shifts. Well, there we are. It is, you know, be like a musk ox. You know, it's that incredible determination, that capacity not to avert our gaze.
Oh my gosh. I just have, you know, the goosebumps and tears in my eyes, because that's what's being called for right now, isn't it?
You know, I think so. Hard as it may be to sit in landscapes that are ravaged, hard as it might be to sit at the bedside of a dying person, or to visit the man on death row, or to go into, you know, a neighborhood that has been redlined and where all of the kids are sick with asthma. This is what my teacher, Glassman Roshi, called taking a plunge. It's plunging into the truth of suffering and really practicing in the charnel ground so that one awakens to this truth of impermanence and also cultivates this quality of resilience, of a deep hardiness that allows us to bring to the world a quality of presence that is characterized by courage and being really awake.
Wow. Thank you for that brilliant story that can touch, I hope, everyone on in the audience, because it's almost stopped me in my tracks to contemplate what you're saying, because we all know what we're in the midst of, and it feels like, what it feels like for me, because I'm a creative person and I always want to encourage people to express their creativity, but it feels like in this bizarre era that we're in, that we're not allowed to be joyful. We're not allowed to, how dare you be happy? How dare you be creative and look like you're having fun when what's going on in the world, And Yeah.
Some of us, Kath, we're able, or we receive this precious opportunity in this time to use the struggles that we're experiencing to dedicating ourselves to fostering sanity, care, and justice in the world. And we have been called to abandon futility and to meet our moral anguish, our grief and our fear with openness and curiosity, and also to be worked by adversity in order to meet the present with awe, with inquiry, with hope and loving action. And, going back to Malala, I feel that she's just such a powerful example of a woman, a young woman today, but Greta Thunberg, the same, who has the guts, the sensitivity, and was able to work, whether it's with neurodiverse state of mind or a bullet in the brain, and able to work things in a way that what appeared was, one's true nature, who one really is. But I think also, Kath, sometimes we can't. It's just not our time. And if that is the case, we mustn't turn away from that. Sometimes we have to heap. Sometimes we make mistakes and we have to withdraw from the world and feel shame. And sometimes we're in the midst of things and we just falter. And sometimes we need to step away. And I know this in working with dying people. There was a point, I lost my father and shortly thereafter my teacher, and it was just so, I needed space to grieve. I had to take the backward step. And sometimes it's just not our time to step forward. But it's also to understand we too are being worked. And others are being worked in their own way. And it's not to add the weight of judgment to the burden that we're already carrying. It's not to turn away from our current experience at all. Even if our response doesn't meet the standards, that we've set for ourselves. And I'm thinking about a wonderful phrase that the late Thich Nhat Hanh, shared with his great community. And it's like when you sort of hit that wall or that threshold, is to turn toward the difficulty and say, hello, old friend, I know you. Hello, old friend, I know you. In other words, it's not mobilizing aggression toward what's arising in this very moment.
Wow. I certainly can identify with everything you've just said, because there have been some very major transitions that I've been weathering. And I suspect that so many people who are listening to this are going through, because so many of my friends are going through such similar things in their own journey. And for you to point to this possibility that we embrace these things in the way that you've articulated and allow us to take these challenges that are presented to us in a framework that gives us an elevated opportunity to become more of who we are as authentic selves, which Gary Noel always talks about. You know, I've known Gary for, I don't know, 35, 40 years. You go, Kathleen, you have to learn to be your authentic self. You know, let's go, what do you mean, Gary? What is that? And so it's people like you. How wise of him to want to have this podcast to bring forward this brilliance that you've become, to allow people to enter into the consciousness that you so generously offer to us to ponder, to take away, to try on with our hands and feet, and take into the hearts and souls of who we are, you know? And when I watched you on TED Talks and that wonderful discourse that you displayed, and I saw you were so full of emotion that was almost at bay. You kept it at bay, but you were so rich with the emotion of what you were saying. And, you know, your presence, I know, has changed me forever. And that's what I hope those people that are watching this can take away from this opportunity to be with you, you know?
Thank you, Kath.
Yeah. What a joy and privilege, you know, to touch into someone like you. You know, you're in that small category of the great thinkers of our era. And I was almost jealous because I saw you talked about, you were, I can't remember exactly what, but you said, well, I didn't have to do any administration. I didn't have to do this. I didn't have to do that. So I had all I could do, all I had the privilege of doing is thinking. I got to think and to read. And most of us are on the speedy treadmill to get to where we don't even always know. So the luxury to be able to think, to ponder words that come into our awareness that can literally change our perspective of how we would approach our lives, you know?
Yeah, the opportunity to reflect is really important. And, you know, I'm smiling a little bit because in my practice of Zen, it's not so much about thinking. It's actually about not thinking. It's about, yeah, you know, it's about this quality of not extracting or not objectifying whatever is arising in any given moment. But it's this capacity to be in a non-dual, a non-separate relationship with things as they are, also with your thought. You know, I mean, I do appreciate thinking. I think a lot. But also I appreciate that I have a practice where thinking is not predominant. So I just wanted to mention that. And that, another piece, Kath, that I think is important. And this is a conversation that I had with a good friend of mine, the astrophysicist, Adam Frank. He wrote a beautiful piece recently. He's actually going to be on CNN shortly, talking about the images of the cosmos that are being reflected back to us from the true web, so to speak. It's very powerful to see, these galaxies and the glimmering cosmos that is traveling through time and space, millions of years, and reaching our eyes. You know, it's like history being made present now about the origins of the cosmos. And the work, Adam and I talk about this often, how the practice that we do, he's a Zen Buddhist as well, the practice that we do so is so deeply oriented to the realization of the sacredness of this life. And he wrote recently, it goes back to the very roots of being human, to a time when our hunter-gatherer ancestors could feel the sense of more, when they came on a bend in a river or stumbled across a mountain glade. And Adam wrote, he said, the sacred is opposite of all those times when we're living in our heads, mulling over our worries or just trying to get by. Sacredness appears in those moments when life overflows its banks. When we see the vast, variegated, and infinite network of life and being we each are a part of. And I believe that more, that sense of sacredness that arises within us, is experienced when we do not divert our gaze. Going back to Terry Tempest Williams, when we don't turn away from whatever is arising within our own experience, if it's anguish or joy, when we don't turn away from the world, from our earth, from each other, the more, from my point of view, really rests in the very marrow of our lives. And it rests between us and each other and between all beings and all things. And even, whether it's a city street, whether it's an ambulance, whether it's an old redwood, the more is always there. The sense of sacredness is always there. Not diverting our gaze and really allowing ourselves to slow down and to stop and to look deeply and to be deep. So I wanted just to bring that into our conversation, the sense of the sacred that is there in all of life, at the bedside of a dying person, sitting across from a man on death row, sitting in the midst of a charred forest, or the charnel ground of Auschwitz or Rwanda. The more is always there when we do not divert our gaze.
Oh, brilliant. I thank you. Yeah. That's, what you know, when you go on the other side and you do the life review and all that. And when I came back, that life review continued. And you talk about, you know, being the observer. And I definitely had that perspective of observation in a way that I didn't have before. And what I noticed when I kind of looked at, and you know, I think about you and your life and your early childhood, and you start connecting all of the dots and seeing how it's all connected, and how purposefully all of these events were there. And I know you talk about being present in the moment, and that sense of that your whole life is actually there in a moment, you know, and to be able to be present and notice, because, you know, it's like when I'm going through stuff, sometimes I'll just look over and there's a words on a billboard and it's saying something to me, you know. I know, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, how did that get there? I never saw that before. Or there's a bumper stick on somebody's car right in front of you. It's like, it's quite comical when you have the ability to notice that the universe is reflecting back to you messages all the time, you know? And if you pay attention, the guidance is there.
Yeah.
Moment to moment. And so talking about the sacredness of life, isn't it about bringing that awareness that you talk about? When we keep that presence there and we notice that, oh my gosh, I looked in the backyard, there was a dead tree, and then, you know, they had to cut it down in the stump. I'm looking at the bark that was coming apart on that stump, and it was like, oh my gosh, that bark is in the shape of a little heart. And I took a picture of it. And I went, well, thank you very much. That was something that I took in because I noticed it. You know?
Beautiful.
You know? So if we know that the universe is actually always there talking to us, then all we have to do is listen. And grace joins us in this journey. Well then. Well then. You know,
I think our time is almost up. I just want to thank you so much for being with me, and also those who are joining your program. And I wish you good luck on the path ahead that may many women sit with you and share with you the stories of life that have given them the wisdom that they are bringing to the world.
Oh my goodness. I can't even thank you enough, except would you be kind enough to perhaps another time come on to the Wise Women?
I'd be honored.
Oh. Yay. Oh, I'm just so thrilled to know you, and grateful to Gary and to Richard Gale, who directed me to have you on the podcast. So I'm very grateful for them to do that. So thank you. Thank you so, so, so very much.